From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pusher City.
Redwood City.
Wilmond.
Midtown, San Jose.
19th Avenue, San Francisco.
San Mateo.
Sunnyvale. Coming up, we'll hear why local law enforcement officials are winding up as defendants in court.
These charges are very unfounded.
Also, what comes to your mind when you think of the East Bay city of Emeryville? Poetry, right?
The wind cautions you to do what you know to be true. Give ride to the freedom that comes from within.
And we'll meet a man trying to revive a deserted corner with some good jazz.
This isn't about making money. It's about creating a space for people to come, a space for the neighborhood, and a space for people to really enjoy and learn what jazz is all about.
We're creating a space to listen to Cross Currents. Stay tuned. Today in San Francisco Superior Court, a judge heard motions in the case of San Francisco Sheriff Ross Mirkarimi. Mirkarimi is accused of domestic violence in the wake of a fight with his wife on New Year's Eve that prosecutors say got physical. Mirkarimi's not the only one having trouble in his new job. A number of local criminal justice officials are on rocky ground in the Bay Area. KLW's criminal justice reporter Rena Palta joins me to tell us about the latest news.
Let's start with the Mirkarimi trial. San Francisco's new sheriff is accused of domestic violence, and now there are photos circulating of the sheriff's wife, Eliana Lopez, with a bruise on her arm, and prosecutors say that she got that from her husband during a fight on New Year's Eve. What happened today in court?
So today in court, the judge in the case decided that they will admit a video of Eliana Lopez speaking with her neighbor about her relationship with Ross Mirkarimi, the sheriff, and what happened the night of New Year's Eve when this fight allegedly took place.
And this video was taken by a neighbor.
Exactly. And Mirkarimi's lawyers had argued that it had no place in court. This was a conversation that happened in the context of a custody battle.
Potential custody battle.
And that it had no place in a domestic violence case. Obviously, the judge disagreed.
And Mirkarimi is not the only one who's having legal trouble. Alameda County's new probation chief, David Muhammad, has been suspended from his job while he fights sexual assault allegations. What's happening with David Muhammad's case?
So, yeah, David Muhammad has been accused of sexual assault by a deputy. This is a man who came to town pretty recently from New York. He had been in Oakland before, went to New York, became kind of a superstar in the progressive law enforcement world, was brought back, you know, with the support of tons of community organizations in Oakland to be this kind of white knight to turn the juvenile justice system around, the criminal justice system around, and make it more rehabilitative and better and more responsive to the community. So this is kind of a devastating blow for that community who thought this was going to be, you know, the savior. Now he's facing sexual assault charges, which is extremely serious and certainly serious to his career.
So what does all of this mean for Bay Area criminal justice and particularly reform?
Yeah, so we've kind of been the epicenter of the reform community for a long time in California and also in the nation. You know, this is where there's a lot of think tanks. There's a lot of academics focusing on criminal justice reform. And we've been slowly kind of building a body of elected officials and law enforcement officials who believe in that reform as well. And so with the combination of Ross Mirkarimi, who took over for reform sheriff Mike Hennessy
mm-hmm.
as, you know, the successor in his legacy, and David Muhammad, who was kind of this new breath of fresh air for the probation department. It's looking a little bleak, but we still do have a lot of officials in place like Chief Wendy Still in San Francisco probation who really embraced this reform message.
And so let's talk about another big reform at the state level, which is what's called realignment, which means that California state prisons are under court order to reduce the prison population because of overcrowding. And so what they're doing is sending inmates back to the county level. How's that going?
So it's going pretty well for the state so far. They've been exceeding their goals in reducing the prison population. The Legislative Analyst's Office produced a study last week, though, that showed that overall, you know, on their two-year plan, they're probably not going to hit their full 33,000 reduction target by the date they specified. So the LAO is trying to get the state to do a few things, to ask for more time from the court to meet their goals and to start talking about how, you know, the infrastructure of the prison system will get reduced once this population is gone. They're saying maybe it's time to talk about closing some prisons.
And so what else did the legislative analyst's office have to say about realignment?
They're also saying that AB 900, which is this bill that was passed a few years ago to give money to build more correctional facilities, should be reexamined. And maybe, you know, those billions of dollars that could be put towards that initiative should be reexamined.
Huh. And so what realignment does is puts the burden of figuring out what to do with these new inmates who are going from prisons to county level at the county level. How are counties dealing with this new influx of inmates?
So California has 58 counties. They're all very different places. They all take a really different approach to criminal justice. Some of them are very punitive. Some of them are more focused on rehabilitation.
So like here in the Bay Area.
Exactly. So you're seeing that play out in how they deal with these new inmates too. San Francisco is putting more into rehabilitation. Some places like San Mateo and Kern County are looking to build more jails to house people so they can, you know, keep their sentences a little longer. You have people like L.A. County, which is taking a very different tact when it comes to prison realignment. And I'm going to have L.A. District Attorney candidate Alan Jackson describe the situation in Los Angeles County. And he spoke with KALW's Nicole Jones.
We have basically here in Los Angeles County, our county jail facility filled to just about capacity right now. In other words, people are getting out of jail because there's a lack of beds on a fraction of the actual time that they should be, that the judge is sentencing them to in county jail. Now, what's going to happen when 8,000 new inmates per year are sentenced to ultimately state prison to do local custody time for that state prison sentence?
That's Los Angeles District Attorney candidate Alan Jackson, and you're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. We're speaking with KALW's criminal justice reporter, Rena Palta. So, Rena, what is L.A. doing to deal with that crisis?
So the county has contracted with a prison building company to do a $5.7 million evaluation of the county's needs. And people are wondering down there if that means that the county is looking to build more jails. And local politicians like Senator Strickland, who's from that area, are also pushing for something that's sure to be very, very controversial. Jackson supports this controversial plan, and here's how he described it.
I think one of the tools that each county should have is the same tool that the states had for decades, and that is the ability to contract with signatory states to an interstate compact that allows for the transfer of California inmates to out-of-state beds for certain payments.
So shipping California inmates to out-of-state private prisons?
Yeah, that would be the option. The bill was introduced by Senator Strickland that would give counties the option to send inmates out of state. And that, people are saying, really contradicts the stated mission of realignment to be more about community corrections, to be more about keeping people close to their families at home. And so there's sure to be a lot of opposition to this measure at the state level.
Rena Palta is KALW's criminal justice reporter, and you can read her blog, The Informant, about criminal justice at our website. It's klw.org. That's where you can also share your story with us and where you can find more local news and subscribe to our podcast. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. And now let's go across the bridge to the East Bay.
This town with its red gold sunsets and shimmering shore, the egret gone to their grasses for the night. Now all the birds settle down. The shutter's final click on night, ready to pull up his covers while the paint chips in the sky offer their nightlight.
A good poem speaks to the senses, stimulates the mind, and takes you places you may know little about.
like, say, Emeryville, California. That's what the poet you just heard was describing. And if all you know about Emeryville is what you can see from Highway 80 or 580, namely a big movie complex and some big box stores, it may surprise you to learn that this small city has joined other Bay Area cities in establishing an official poet laureate. The holder of the position, like all poets laureate, serves as a resource for and a promoter of poetry and other literary arts. KLW's Stephen Short has our story.
Janelle Moon is a poet.
No going back to the large house with the view. No going back to the cold room in the dusty hotel. No sandy beach or salty sardines. Queer girl, some say there is no God for you.
And Ruth Atkin is not a poet.
Whereas on April 6, 2010, by resolution number 10-62, the City Council approved the establishment of a poet laureate program for the city of Emeryville.
But it was Ruth Atkin's idea that Emeryville, population 10,000, should have an official poet.
Emeryville had a strong history of supporting visual arts, and I thought, well, why not do something that can enhance the spoken word and written arts? So from there, the idea of a poet laureate program was born.
The wind cautions you to do what you know to be true. Give ride to the freedom that comes from within.
It was a brilliant move to have this program because I think that not only the artists in the community and the writers, but the kids.
Lisa Sullivan works for the city of Emeryville.
And I run the Art in Public Places program. The kids look around at their community, and they're growing up in a community that says it's important to have the arts and it's important to write poetry, and this is what gives life meaning.
I walk through the underpass, newly lit, where bronze sculptures tell a story of everyday people.
Poet Janelle Moon says,
one of my fondest memories of my family is the five of us sitting in the living room on a cold winter night, reading together, and the only sound, the clicking on and off of the furnace. And it was just like a little piece of heaven of the family together in that way.
Okay, I just got off the elevator. So,
which? Hi, is that you, Stephen?
Oh,
hi. Hello, my voice.
I meet Moon in her tiny, tidy apartment out on the bayside of Emeryville. She has gray, mid-length hair, and today she's wearing a plum-colored sweater which matches her large, square-rimmed glasses. A calico cat eventually rubs against my leg as we talk.
My home, and we can sit down right here if you'd like.
Oh, that's great. Great.
When not fulfilling her official duties, Moon is a hypnotherapist and a writing coach. She's developing a poetry program at Emory High School. Moon realizes the way she grew up reading isn't how young people in Emeryville read today, but she says poetry and literature still matter.
Let me give you an example. I went into the Emeryville High School and read from some of my poems that and honestly told some difficulties that I had in childhood. And afterwards, a young girl came up and said, could she share her work with me sometime soon? So I asked her what place poetry had in her life, and she said, it's the only thing that makes me want to live.
Moon says poetry, although often considered delicate, can have a strong, visceral impact on people who open themselves to it, especially here in Emeryville, where the crime rate is 3 times the national average and 80% of students live below the national poverty level.
Poetry gives us inspiration. It gives us a wider view of living. It gives us metaphor and language of places that we haven't been, so it can enrich our world. And I think poetry can teach us about oppression. It can teach us about beauty and meaning-making. There's something about living in the world with a sense of connectedness and a sense of understanding what's going on with other people that makes life richer.
The poet laureate of Emeryville feels that that understanding has faded.
There were many years that academic men took over poetry, and that you had to know the myth or be very well educated and know the references in order to understand their poetry, and poetry lost its audience. And with the coming of the women...
Women such as Sylvia Plath and Anne Sexton.
They changed poetry so people could relate to it as a narrative, as a lyrical story.
And those changes, Moon says, helped pave the way for rap.
Dive right in to when I glide my pen across the pad. Of course I'm bad. Ultra fly multiplied by 10.
I don't do rap, but I love rap and I love poetry slam. I like any kind of poetry.
If you're stressing the track, but I'm defined best by time I invest in the raps like that.
It's a people's voice and it tells a story, and also it's a way that marginalized people get their voice out.
Maybe Emeryville needs an official rapper.
Well, I think they do, and it wouldn't surprise me if the next poet laureate would be a rapper. There's no reason it has to be an older person that's been in the community for a long time.
But for now, it is. Moon holds the title until October 2012. And during that time, she'll use her poetry to inspire, to use her words, beauty and meaning-making and a wider view of living.
Yeah, it's like that without a doubt.
In Emeryville, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
Got a poem you want to share with us? You can give us a call at 415-264-7106. Again, that number is 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message and we'll try to get your voice on the air.
I strike the mic, recite the right lines to make a page come alive, never half step. Fine aspect of what I provide, fantastic and advertised with pride. No lies, I glide down.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Poetry's been around for millennia. The Epic of Gilgamesh dates to about the 18th century BC. And Homer's The Iliad and The Odyssey were first written down around 750 BC. What most people don't know about the early days of poetry was its reliance on music. These poems were not meant to be read, but sung.
Let's cut out, let's go into the real interior of the country where hawk shops reign, mere unblind anarchy upon us. The end is here, but golf goes on.
That's San Francisco poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti reciting his poem Junkman's Obligato with the accompaniment of a jazz band. And here in the Bay Area, music is just about everywhere. On the streets, in the halls of BART, and at clubs like Yoshi's, the Paramount, and the Great American Music Hall. Those are some of the Bay Area's best-known music venues. Then there are the less widely known but still popular spots like the Mission's Red Poppy Art House or Oakland's Café Van Cleef. And then there are the places no one knows about, the places you sometimes can't find even if you know where to look. KALW's Casey Miner discovered one such spot on a recent bike ride. She stopped in once, and then she went back for this installment of Meet Your Neighbors.
I like my neighbors. I like my neighbors. I like them a lot.
Walking down Shattuck Avenue toward where it meets Telegraph, around 45th Street in North Oakland, it would be easy to miss Cosmo's Jazz Spot. It's in a big, gray, impersonal building. The signs are small. The street is dark. It's cold and it's raining in North Oakland tonight. But inside the club, it's warm and inviting. Groups of two or three people sit around a few small tables, drinking wine they've brought with them from red plastic cups.
It's a word, a thing. If it ain't.
I normally don't come this route unless it's dropping my dog off at VCA. So I normally wouldn't, so I'm happy to know it's here.
And I actually walked by it once, so they could do with maybe a little more lighting, some glitter or something.
It's extremely intimate. It's almost invisible from the outside.
And luckily my buddy could hear the music from on the street, and that's how we found our way in.
Jua Howard, Andrea Claiborne, and Henry Holmes all found their way in tonight because they know the band. The members of Four and More are arranged against a backdrop of heavy black curtains. There's a drum set, a bass, a keyboard, a saxophone, and a singer. There's no stage in the small room, not as such, just a subtle shift in lighting.
I'm going to give you a little case of musical whiplash tonight, because we're going to sing a lot of different songs from a lot of different eras.
There's some atmosphere here, so I don't know where exactly it comes from, but as soon as people start playing, it's like, it's just alive.
That's Rob Rickle, and this is his place. He once had a dog named Cosmo, hence the name. The doors have been open since late 2011.
And, you know, we're kind of off the beaten track a little bit. You have to look. You know, you really have to know about it, and you have to look.
That's true even if you live in this neighborhood. Just a few blocks in either direction are Temescal's restaurants and bars, major bus line, a lot of the neighborhood foot traffic. But before Rickle set up shop, this place had been vacant for months. That was one of the things that attracted him. He wanted to create a destination.
I'd like to have it open all the time. You know, I'd like to have people in here playing music. I'd like to have people in here enjoying. And just, you know, people want to come in and talk and have a cup of coffee. I make really good coffee.
Rickle's in and out of the space most days.
And I may be sitting at the bench working on a guitar or something like that. Sometimes I put new electronics in guitars for people and that kind of thing. But I'm always here doing something.
He says that's how a lot of people find Cosmos, just because they happen to run into him.
And I like good conversations, so, you know, I'd love people to come in and take a look and see what it looks like in the daytime, and then come at night, see how it transforms.
That's okay. I'm so sorry. Andrew's phone is ringing. It's not in our key.
The show tonight is good. The group, close and friendly. Afterwards, members of the band compare the experience to an old-school New York City jazz club.
I sort of felt the first time I came here like I was in kind of an underground sort of village atmosphere, and I like that.
Kathy Blackburn is the band's lead singer.
As I told some of my friends, it's kind of divey, but in a good way.
Cosmos is not only a place for bands to come and play, it's also a place for bands to rehearse. The whole idea is to spread the joy in the neighborhood and to make music happen.
Rob Rickle charges bands to use the space, but he's not really making any money. He actually says he's in the red. He wants more people to find out about Cosmos, but he says he'll keep it open as long as he can, no matter what.
You can hang out as long as you'd like. You know, we're here for the duration.
In Oakland, I'm Casey Miner for Cross Currents.
Okay, just take a short break, so come on back after it's over.
You can find out what's coming up at Cosmos at their website, cosmosjazzspot.com. Is there an interesting spot or undiscovered place in your neighborhood? Would you like other people to know about it? You can tell us at kalw.org. That's also where you can hear all of our stories and subscribe to our podcast. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Hanna Baba, Julie Kane, Martina Castro, Artyom Skunikovs, Jen Chin, Audrey Dilling, Julia Lundberg, Casey Miner, Lisa Ratner, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Judy Silber. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is on the web at citycarshare.org. Also, thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll hear how some immigrants to the Bay Area got their start.
My dad never told us that we were going to be living in boxcars. Well, I was a young child, so I didn't really, even if he mentioned it, you know, I don't remember.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. The band you're hearing is MJ's Brass Boppers. You can hear them this Friday at Disco Volante in Oakland, starting about 9 p.m. To hear them and all of the local bands featured on our show, visit our website. It's klw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.